Welcome to the Ascension Podcast with Paul James Caden. In this podcast, we will discuss philosophy and spirituality from the Urantia book, living a peaceful, balanced life, spirituality and many other topics that relate to the growth and evolution of your soul. And now here is your host, Paul James Caden.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ascension Podcast. I'm Paul James Caden, and this week, as promised, I mentioned last week that I was going to have a very special guest on the show, and we were going to delve into some things concerning the Urantia book. So I feel that this is going to be a very enlightening, hopefully, educational show this week. And I'm being joined by Derek Samaras, who works for the Urantia Book Fellowship and also has a podcast. I believe it is The Spirit of Truth through the Urantia Book Network. So welcome to the show, Derek. Thanks for taking time to do this today.
Hey, Paul. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to hang out and explore some truth.
I hear that, man. Now your show, it is called Spirit of Truth, correct?
Yeah, actually, we have two podcasts on the same Urantia Book Network YouTube channel, and the first one that came out was called Spirit of Truth, and that's where I interviewed a lot of longtime Urantia Book readers who I felt have been so transformed by the revelation teachings in the Urantia Book that they've taken on a new lifestyle that is uplifting the quality of thinking and culture in society based on their influence from the Urantia Book. So that was a real awesome opportunity to really deeply understand and learn how deep and how much history there is and how much continuity there really is in this really young revelation.
And you have a second show, or?
Oh, yeah. So we have another show now since Chuck Thurston joined the Urantia Book Network team. And we do a podcast that's called Study Group.
Right.
And it's basically based off of the concepts of people originally started studying this Urantia Book because it's very dense and it's a big book and you got to break it down. And so people would gather together and read parts and discuss and have little workshop breakouts and things like that, and similar to Bible study perhaps. And so we kind of just then put that as the name of a podcast, Study Group, and it's essentially Chuck and myself and sometimes our cat. And we just break down topically concepts in life and then how that is reflected and enlightened a bit through the Urantia Book. And it's been an opportunity for us to see what's going on in the world and then seeing how revelation can help and giving or how the Urantia Book revelation can help and how we're then going through that same experience of seeing then why this Urantia Book was so important and why we're being loved by our, you know, higher celestial family to help us this way.
And I'm going to leave a link to Derek's podcast below, because I can certainly vouch if you want to listen to something that's about, we were just talking before the show, personal spiritual development, growing your soul, which we've really seemed to lost sight of in society today. It's all about religion married to, politics and, a host of other, secular ideologies. And, we're all so divided. And if you're somebody who's tired of all that, Derek and Chuck have, a great podcast, Spirit of Truth, a study group. I watch them when they come out because they're just refreshing and they're inspiring to listen to. So,
thanks, bro.
You're welcome. I'd recommend people definitely go over there and take a listen, because it's really good work.
Thanks, man. Some of the things that I appreciate about that is that both Chuck and myself have been through some things in life, and it allows us to be a little bit more humble and compassionate about some of the challenges that we can all face. But yet we're not backing down from the courageous thinking that's required in order to continually progress spiritually and develop our souls. You know, it's like it's going to take work on our end. It's not something that is a mystical, blissful state and then it's over. Mm-hmm. This is a eternal career that we've accepted.
Yeah, I think a lot of people certainly look for that, just the blissful moment, and then they seek the next one. Or, you know, I've heard people say, well, why should I, you know, study or think, you know, when the church tells me everything I need to know? You know, you just can't be handed God, you know, but that's all something we'll get into in a minute, because that's kind of what we're going to talk about in this show, with the importance of the Urantia book in our spiritual journey, what it's telling us and how it really balances out this modern mindset, you know, of getting too secular with our religion and, you know, turning on one another. But before we begin, I just wanted to touch base, because I mentioned last week that I've done shows about the Urantia book in the past. I've recently kind of changed my podcast, the format. So for those who are new, I said we'd talk a little bit about, you know, where it came from, its origins. As we were discussing before the show, there's a lot of misinformation, you know, online about what it is. So if we could take, you know, 5 minutes or so just to, you know, talk about what it is and, you know, where it came from, to get folks up to speed that might be tuning in for the first time and saying, the Urantia book, what the heck is that? You know?
Yeah. Okay, well, let me give, like, the subtitle, and then I'll go into the description, like if it were a YouTube video or something like that.
All right. So
the title would be that the Urantia book is the fifth of five epical revelations on this planet that have come to this planet from higher celestial administration in order to work with evolution in hopes of uplifting the spiritual identity of individuals and the collective on this planet. And so there have been five attempts. The Urantia book is the fifth. And they've all built off of the last.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, if you're completely new to the idea of revelation, you might only think of the book of Revelations from the book of John. This is the concept of what is called an epical revelation. Now, the Urantia book gives insight into the differences of two revelations. One is called auto or self-revelation. And that's when God is speaking clearly through you, inside you. The other is called epical revelation. And that's when there's moments in histories of a planet's development where the actual hand of divinity has touched the reality. So there is that painting of the finger of God touching the finger of hand. That's where there actually is a breakthrough from the divine realm into the evolutionary material realm. And that's where we witnessed the birth of Jesus being an example of one of those epical revelations. Mm-hmm. Where actually a higher celestial administrative being has taken on physical form to now influence the spiritual identity of that planet and people. So we see that the fifth one now, if I could say all five of them, the first one being what a lot of people evolutionarily have come to interpret as the Anunnaki. The Urantia book calls it the planetary prince and his corporeal staff. And that is that when a planet is inhabited by a conscious personality beings, as humans once became, at that level, a planetary prince comes, and that's to start the administrative evolution of things like fire building, animal husbandry, parts of agriculture, alphabet, basket weaving, those basic things of culture, right? And so they have these responsibilities. Unfortunately, on our planet, things went a little bit weird, and it's portrayed in some of those Anunnaki tales that are in Sumerian tablets if you want to go through them, and we can talk about that another time. But the second epical revelation was what we found as Adam and Eve, right? And what we've heard about in biblical times is the creation story and things like that. That mission went awry, as we've heard in different accounts also throughout evolutionary interpretation. The Urantia book gives a lot of insight in that one, in that episode. And then the third one was a revelation by someone we call, who a lot of people might know, is Machaventa Melchizedek, who shows up in the Bible a little bit. But that was 2,000 years before the birth of Christ, before the birth of Jesus. So we're talking 4,000 BC, something like that. So at that point, he made way for there to be a reception to the mission of Jesus in that Levant area, right there in Jerusalem, with the Hebrew people. And obviously that mission wasn't completely successful or whatever, but enough that when Jesus was born as a Hebrew in Palestine, that then there was continuity in the fourth epical revelation, which was Jesus, in the plans that then Machaventa Melchizedek laid out, so that there could be further reception for Jesus. And what Melchizedek talked about was that you are saved through faith. Faith in God is what will give you eternal life. Mm-hmm. And that concept really laid down a nice foundation for then Jesus to come in and say that you are loved by God. And through your faith in doing God's will, you are in the kingdom. You're a child of God. And so then we know how that Jesus story kind of unfolded. And now, you know, 2,000 years after that, we have, I'm sorry, with Melchizedek, I said 4,000 BC. It was 4,000 years ago, 2,000 BC. I just want to make that clear. I'm not that silly. But now here we have 2,000 years later. And as you were just talking about this secularization of religion and the way that we're kind of morally declining and backsliding from this even notions of monotheism and spiritual soul progression, like you talked about, that now deity has felt that it's important for them to help us out and send in further information. And so that's where we have now that fifth epical revelation, which is the Urantia book. And it coming in relatively more modern times seems to lead for interesting application of how they got it through, because they did not send it as like a special being like Jesus or Melchizedek or something like that. It came through an individual who was in a sleeping state. And psychologist Dr. Sadler was working with this individual and able to dictate or write down and put together what was coming through. And then there's all sorts of celestial activity with going over what came through that I don't claim to be authority over, but there is a forum that was created between Sadler and his professional colleagues, and they would go over some of this content that Sadler would gather, and they would ask questions based on the time of, you know, the history, the time of history that they were in, and their religious perspectives and other things. And then what would happen is that eventually these papers would start to materialize with answers on them. And they then would go over them again. And again, I don't claim to know all the details, but, you know, I've done a lot of outreach, and so I do have to explain some things. And there's insight into beings that are called midwayers. And I'm sure a lot of people have different interpretations of what midwayers are, but they're pretty close to humans in sense of kin, maybe interpreted as angels or the watchers or just some kind of being that's kin to us, but just on the other side of the veil of the visual realm and perspective, but still equally invested in the planet and the people. So in that sense, some of the Urantia book history of how it was formed is that the midwayers had a lot to do with the human involvement of bringing this revelation out into manifestation. This is the first revelation that was a collection of papers as opposed to one personality. So there's many authors who have authored each paper the way that this book is broken down in chapters, and then they speak of what they've experienced instead of one personality coming and speaking for all of them. And that's something that I do find unique, because you know, you can hear what they maybe like a Melchizedek has experienced and then writes about, versus, you know, one being speaking for other beings and what their experiences were. So it's a unique thing, and your answer book is something that has allowed me to expand my framework of cosmic identity and cosmic thinking into a way that actually does enlighten a path and a way for soul growth that is unique and personal for everyone, but yet it is of truth, beauty, and goodness. It reflects something that is of positive growth, not something that is of sacrifice. And that's something that I really resonate with, especially coming from a Roman Catholic background and having to turn from that, but coming back to my deep appreciation for God and then the heroic qualities of Jesus in a very human way that I was able to learn and be influenced by a lot more in finding the adventure book.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, you know, that there's people that, of course, very religious folks that cast that shadow of doubt. And I've had a, you know, there's a variety of people that listen to my show, and some of them are, you know, evangelical, or they came out of that kind of background, and will say, well, you know, you seem like you're, you know, a pretty nice guy, and you know, you love God, but you know, why are you reading this Urantia book? This is it's Satan's Bible, you know. But you know, I would say to that, you know, for me, read it. And you know, number two, you know, that there's so many people that I've ran across or introduced the book to since I've been reading it, and they've all said pretty much the same thing. They said as they read it, they came across things in there that they said some of them were brought to tears, because it was what they always knew within themselves their whole lives until religion, you know, or their family got them into religion and taught them completely something different that was against their own intuition or, you know, the leadings of God in their life when they were very young. And I had that experience with several things in the Urantia book. We talked a ways back, you know, I ran across it in a Barnes & Noble probably around 1995, and I didn't know what it was. And I thought it was the Urantia book. I never heard of it. You know, it didn't have internet. And I thought about buying it, because I would always, like, read through it, and I'd catch these little things. And, like, with the thought adjuster and the fragment, you know, of God within us. And I'm like, geez, these are things I thought about like years ago, and I still ponder, and I never heard anybody talk about it. But here it is, you know, like in this book. And I never bought it because I was like, and I'm not going to buy it if it's something that was put out by some crazy like UFO cult or something. But, you know, it took me a while to actually find out what it was. And, you know, it just really speaks, I think, to people on that deeper spiritual soul level, where they just read it and they say, somehow I knew that, you know?
Yeah, it's affirming. Yeah. You know, like, I had the same experience where I was like, just opening the book, and they talk about, you know, the personality of God, and God the Father, and the attributes of God, and things like that. And while it's kind of complicated language, there's such a affirming quality that you're like, yes, that's the God that I have known in spite of everything else that has told me not to know him. And even though I haven't known how to grow with him, I know that he's there, and I just don't know how to access it. And here now I'm starting to grow and gain perhaps a user interface of how I can go inward and to access this new relationship with God.
And how would you personally respond to the people that say, well, doesn't matter what you say, that this is the devil's Bible, it's preaching a, you know, a different Jesus, because there's some things different, you know, about the story of Jesus and the life and teachings. How would you respond to people that are afraid and think this was something that was given to, you know, humanity by demons. You know, that's a lot of...
I think first I'd have to use the spirit of truth in my own personal discernment of whether this person is even going to be halfway reasonable, whether there's just a crack of being decent. Because if this person has just crossed me off and now is like vengeful towards me, it's going to be very hard for me to find, you know, a way to enlighten the situation. But other than me being graceful and kind and respectful, if that isn't the case and someone isn't being too hostile, you know, then it's more of just the manner of how I am with someone. And then from my experience, to really honestly and authentically portray how important Jesus has become in my life from learning more about his life. And that has changed me and given me an opportunity to have an older brother and a friend that I never had, and to be someone that I hold honorably, and that I want to be better because I can shoot for something higher. And I now have a living demonstration in my life that will always be there with me to show me the way. And that's something that then I try to share with the person who's right in front of me. And if they're halfway open person, then the spirit of truth registers in their heart that, you know, there is a way. And it's through Jesus, and it's through the truth, and it's special for them, however they unfold their relationship with that. And hopefully, usually that at least lets them understand that, like, I love Jesus, and if anything else, it's that, and that I'm willing to be here with you when we talk about this stuff.
And I definitely agree with that. I mean, I've read the Bible, I still do, you know, I've studied, you know, the history, you know, where it came from, early Christianity, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. I still read it, you know. I haven't thrown it away, or, you know, all this, you know, it's a bunch of crap. But I would say, through reading the Arantia book, the presence of Jesus has become more real, more accessible, and more loving in my life than I was when I was just, you know, the Bible thumping, you know, church going guy that took everything, you know, that your denomination was telling you to believe. You know, here's how you access God.
Yeah, the doctrines that make it impersonal.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, you know, one of the great things that the Arantia book talks about is how truth cannot be contained. It's living. You have to live and experience the truth. Once it's like trying to capture it and contained, it becomes this ideological material thing. And that's where you can have fixation and judgment and punishment over this difference of beliefs. But truth requires faith to embark upon the experience of it, of truth itself. And that's why, you know, they talk about that Jesus is the truth, you know, like the Logos made flesh, the Word of God walking, because his life is a demonstration of truth, because it's a demonstration of God the Father in him. So that's why what I really learned then, and then, you know, even in the book of John, he talks about, like, you know, I'm going to go away now and I'm going to go to my Father, but I will send the Spirit of Truth, who won't speak of his name, but he'll show you of that which is to come and all that stuff. And so here we have the Spirit of Truth working with us, which is Jesus in spirit living with us, teaching us the way, if we can be open and honest and humble and authentic to work with him. The Arantia book talks about that the more you learn about the life of Jesus, the more the Spirit of Truth can work with you and show you flashes of Jesus's experience as you can relate to him as a human, like he was, as we are. So it's this like built-in program, UI interface with the Spirit of Truth, that the more we read the playbook of Jesus's life, now we can get further insights into the wholeness of the realization of lessons and learning and greater understandings of why he was doing and what he was doing. And then we can relate to that in our own life. And that allows us to really start to build our souls in a direction that's more Godward.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I remember, you know, I was not a very good yes man when I was, you know, in religion. I had a lot of questions, and I disagreed a lot. And that was one of the questions I always had, you know, was, and one of the things that the Urantia book affirmed for me, you know, and I always asked that question to myself and even to, you know, pastors and priests and, you know, other Christians, is why don't we as believers follow the example of Jesus that we have in the Gospels rather than what people are telling us about Jesus, their interpretation of his words? You know, doesn't it seem, you know, kind of counterproductive and, you know, contradictory? But, you know, there's in a lot of churches what I call, and, you know, pastor worship and priest worship, it's, you know, they put these people on a pedestal, and, you know, what they say is might as well be written by the finger of God, like Ten Commandments with Moses, because they just can't not accept it.
Yeah, you wonder how many of those people are just unwitting secularists, like Urantia talks about, where it's not about growing your soul in courageous thinking with Christ. It's like doing the right, it's like making your bed every day so that you feel, or mowing your lawn so that you're accepted in the community. It's, there's like a ceiling to that act. And so if you just abide by the laws and the doctrines and the judgments and all that stuff, and you don't like express the uniqueness of what the Spirit of Truth is working with you, then you can start to like, you just hit a plateau, and you're just used to the physical, emotional state of fitting in and belonging versus, dude, God might be asking you to step outside of what you think is yourself. It almost becomes an over-self-importance and over-self-indulgence because you're so worried about self fitting in with something that's external. And then you're always being led by what externally is telling you how to be. And that's not where God is. God's inside you. So that's where you got to develop that relationship, that internal validation. I feel from my experience, it's way more holy than any type of human worship, like worshiping a human for sitting on the pulpit or something like that, standing at the pulpit. So then in my mind, I think that then people are used to a chemical feeling in their bodies of what it feels like to like belong or to be able to chill. And trust me, I'm lazy just like anybody else. I like to chill, but I know that that can't last forever. It's not sustainable. The Urantia book talks about like loyal people are growing people, and that you're either growing or you're dying. Mm-hmm. And it's not to be like a drill sergeant, but it's like, look at it. Just look at it. If you're not putting your consciousness and your attention on your spiritual things, then what will you have of spirit to take with you when you move on?
Yeah, it's a great question. And that really kind of builds the little bridge that what we were talking about before the show that I wanted to make mention of, that, you know, one of the things why the Urantia book is important for, you know, our spiritual journey as, you know, individuals and, you know, the collective, is that it really does give us a more balanced, logical, loving, insightful faith, you know, personal relationship, you know, with God, with the Spirit of Truth, and we're not sucked into all that belonging, you know, the group mentality.
And yeah, you know, you got me thinking of like even what it asks us to do, and I don't want it to sound dogmatic, like, oh, well, it says do this, blah, blah, blah. But bear with me, because it's almost abstract. It's asking us to break the norm. It doesn't mean be, you know, a rebellious criminal. It means if you can really see how Jesus lived his life, he was not accepted by the ways of the world. You know, like he had to go against the enmity of the world. they rejected him. He even talked to his apostles. He said, look, if you find yourself in hard times and the world rejects you, remember, they first hated me. You know, and so this is, as we just talked about, the Logos made flesh, the truth, living. So how can a world that hates the truth and put it to death accept the truth now? You know, it's like, I don't feel pessimistic, as we're seeing the spirit of truth is working and we're growing into this understanding of our familyhood and how we are related, our deeper connection spiritually perhaps. But understand, don't fool yourself that this is a world that rejected Jesus, or at least certain channels of the world, because as he would say, that the common man would hear him gladly. So what I like about it is that it's asking us to be highly courageous and show a lot of faith when there isn't visual validation. One of the things of coming from this planet is that the Urantia book gives a lot more insight about the Lucifer Rebellion than like very lightly gets touched on in the Bible. It really goes into a lot of depth about it and how we're really dealing with a lot of those Luciferian manifesto principles and ideologies right now and throughout, you know, a lot of secular history of our planet. And I can see a lot of my brethren falling prey to its ideological sophistries and then feeling self-righteous in how they're acting.
Absolutely.
And then here I am as a follower in Jesus, having to be patient and tolerant with someone who's trying to accuse me of that which they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, upon whose authority are you teaching? Because I'm regurgitating the priest class through the TV or whatever it is that is telling them how to think. And now I've been put in a position that is no longer personal. It's no longer human. No longer their brethren. And that's where these ideological, these ways of thinking, that this belief structure divides us. And the answer, because it's really good quote where it says, the argumentative defense of any proposition is inversely proportional to the truth contained within that. Meaning, if you're going to act like a jerk over your point and break that sacred trust of us being brothers, then there's probably not a lot of truth in what you're saying, because you're willing to be that way and that you'll act that way to distract yourself and others from your lack of truth.
Yeah,
so you can really see it. I mean, look at Jesus. I mean, he allowed himself to go on the cross. He could have turned everyone into little toads or whatever, you know? But
yeah, and we do see so much of that. Like we were talking, you know, that, you know, the Urantia book bringing things more to, you know, reality, how we see God, how we see one another. And, you know, we were talking before the show, you know, kind of the modern day woke and enlightenment versus, you know, real enlightenment and spiritual growth. You know, there's so many people that, like you said, they parrot the priest class, whoever it is. And, you know, then you have all these internet, you know, quote unquote prophets and ministers, and they mix Gnosticism and conspiracy theory, and they get all these people going, oh yeah, you know, they're all out to get us, and you know that's they're forming groups and militias and, you know, stockpiling food and places to run away with, and yet they forget what Jesus said, that when he said, you know, my kingdom is not of this world. And, you know, if it were, you know, my followers would fight for it, but they didn't. And then he was crucified. And, you know, they don't realize, you know, Jesus didn't have a political affiliation. He was out there saying, hey, fight for Caesar, or, you know, fight for the Sanhedrin or the Pharisees or whoever, you know. But, you know, we're so enmeshed in all this, you know, political and conspiracy and whatever else. And just think of those words, by their fruits you shall know them. You know, what is all this? What is the fruit it's bore in our world and in our lives? It's division, it's hatred, it's violence against one another, verbal and physical. And that's a real shame. You know, and that's why I, you know, say, hey, the Urantia book is important, and that's why I gave your podcast a shout out at the beginning of the show, because you're not getting all that rotten fruit, you know.
But thanks, man. Well, I find like fruit spoils on the vine, you know, if you're not using it. If you got fruit, you got to use it. You share it, you make a pie, do something. But if you don't use the gifts that God has given you, why will He give you more? You're still filled with your own spoiled fruit. And so what I like about the Urantia book is that it gives an opportunity for each individual to understand the importance of self-mastery and how it, you know, and Jesus, like, it's more important to, you know, conquer your own tongue than to seize a city, essentially. Like, master yourself before you go about trying to master others and other things and, like, judging and stuff. Kind of that, like, notion of, like, judge not, lest ye be judged.
Mm-hmm.
And we really do need to understand that we are just children in this thing, and some of us can go off the deep end. But the more that you focus on the inner broadcast, the inner relationship with God, the Spirit of Truth, Jesus, self-mastery of forging that diamond out of the coal that God needs you to be, then a lot more peace is in your heart when you deal with these type of judgmental people of the world. You know, because you see them where they are, and you feel, I sort of feel bad. Like, it doesn't take away from the personal pain that you might feel when someone is the way they are. But you also then are like, thank you, Father, for blessing me with the truth and the opportunity to grow with you, for it has made all the difference. And that's something that I would never trade, ever.
No, I definitely agree with that as well. You know.
But the political wokeness, you know, I used to be kind of politically aware, and I'd see all the, like, really, like, messed up hypocrisies and lies and our governments and where our money would go and people who would die because of it and stuff. And you can like, get very aggressive about it. And that's where, you know, you start to learn live by the sword, die by the sword.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, like, from dust to dust stuff, because it's all intellectual fighting. And that's not really what we're asked to do as far as growing our soul. You can't fight your soul. You can't fight somebody to get a soul. This isn't the movie Highlander, where there can be only one. You got to behead everybody, and only you win when you're the last one standing. The whole theme of this existence is that we're all family. If you can learn to act in accordance with that, then it's like, you know, you want to do well for your family, be a nice demonstration for your brethren so that, you know, they can look to your support and that you're capable of supporting them. And now, yeah, on this planet, you know, with the Lucifer Rebellion and everything, it's not all roses, as we know, but they also tell us that we have a rare opportunity from the experience of being born and living on a planet where we don't have visual celestial help. It's not like Adam and Eve are standing in front of us, or Jesus, or Melchizedek, or anybody. We're doing this all from our inner-led spirit convictions. And that's something that's remarkable in the cosmos and highly valued. It's called something that's called an agandanter, someone who believes without seeing. And that's highly valued in the universal ascension plan by having an individual who can come from that faith-tested experience. So there's another thing to be proud about coming from such a challenging planet as well.
Very true. But my friend, we are about running out of time for this particular show. And I just want to say, you know, I hope everyone listening got something out of this. I thought it was a great conversation. And,
yeah, thanks, Paul.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on, because this was a great conversation. I think it was very rich with a lot of little gems for people to go back and sift through and, you know, hopefully take their lives in a better direction, listening to, you know, the Spirit of Truth and those divine guidances from within.
Amen. Yeah, well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I congratulate you on your expressions and your courageous thinking, and God bless you, and you know, may have good fortune in all that you do and however I can help, man.
Hey, I appreciate it, and same to you. And hey, I'm sure I'll be hitting you up again to say, hey, come back and talk about this. You know?
Excellent. Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm definitely interested in having, you know, more of your Rancho book readers on the show to really talk about their experiences and, you know, all these things that, that the book, you know, encourages us to do, and the way to connect with God, because it's very important. You know, we're following too many secular voices in the world right now, and it's blotting out the inner broadcast, I think, eclipsing it.
Totally, yeah, inner eclipse.
So, folks, we appreciate you listening to our show here today, and as usual, stay in love, stay in the light, and I will see you next week here on the Ascension Podcast. Okay.
All right. We're clear.
We are clear.
Cool, man.